Archer will say good morning. Today's daf is Sadi Test 99. We're going to begin actually at the top of 99. And Hashem, our shir this morning is dedicated by Sonia Brockfischel-Kozlovsky and Henry and Barbara Rosenbaum and families in commemoration of the yahrzeit today of Sonia and Henry's mother, Mrs. Ruth Rosenbaum, Rachel Bas Herschel, Allah Shalom. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Hashem will have an aliyah and the family in Achama. So Rosh says, let's begin. So remember, we ended off yesterday. We did the Mishnah. So we'll start with the Gemara on Sadik Tes Amud Aleph. So remember again, just very quickly, the essence of the Mishnah was the following, that if a person borrows an animal, and the mashil, the owner of the animal, chooses to send the animal to the borrower without the request of the borrower, meaning of the mashil, of the owner's own volition, so the mashil retains responsibility over that animal until it reaches the hands of the shoah, to the point that if something were to happen to that animal on the way, ultimately, again, the mashil would be responsible, not the shoah. If, however, the shoel says to the mashiel, the borrower says to the owner, send me the animal, right? You send it to me. If he instructs the mashiel to send the animal, then the borrower takes responsibility for the animal already at the time that it is sent. So remember, again, the examples the Mishnah gave is that if one goes ahead and sends the animal in the hands of his son, in the hands of his shaliach, in the hands of his eved, then ultimately, again, the mashil goes ahead and retains responsibility. Says the Gemara, biad avdo chayiv. So says the Gemara the following. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Biad avdo chayiv. Bitmiya katani. Amar lei ashoel. Shilcha li biad avdo chayiv. V'shilcha lo chayiv ashoel ba'on se b'derech. V'hari lo yotzis sa. Mirishos mashil, diad evet kiadra baldamya, vahari hukilo holicholohu. So we'll say, watch this. So the Gemara is picking up on a very specific case. Let's say the shoah, the borrower, says to the shoah, says to the mashil, I'm sorry, the borrower says to the owner, send me the cow in the hand of your eved, right? So dispatch your eved, send your eved, and let him bring me the cow. So according to the psak of the Mishnah, since it was the borrower who initiated the transfer, therefore the borrower has full responsibility for whatever happens to the animal over the course of transit. So says the Gemara, I don't understand. If it is the eved of the owner who is transporting the animal, then one's eved is like his property. If one's eved is like his property, then indeed the shor or the cow has not yet left the property or the possession of the owner. If that's the case, then why should the borrower be chayiv for onsim during transit? The onsim ultimately, again, should be borne by the owner. Yad eved kiad rabo. Amr Shmuel, so Shmuel says, biyad eved ivri. Dilo kani le gufei. So Shmuel's answer is, we're talking about an eved ivri, a Jewish servant. And remember, again, a Jewish servant is not really acquired by his master. This is a very important distinction. Eved kanani is considered to be property of the master. Eved ivri is not property of the master. So therefore, the Gemara suggests over here that this is talking about a case where the adon, where the master is sending the cow in the hand. So again, remember, the case over here is very specific. The borrower is requesting of the owner to send the cow to the borrower, from the owner to the owner, and he's requesting it to send it in the hands of his eved, meaning of the owner's eved. So now the Gemara is suggesting over here that the reason why there's a transfer of possession from the owner to the borrower, even though the animal is in the hands of the eved of the owner, and normally an eved of the owner is like the owner's property, so it hasn't really left the owner's domain, is because we're talking about an eved ivri who is not owned, his guf is not owned ultimately by the owner. Therefore, as soon as the owner dispatches, it ultimately becomes the property of the borrower. Says the Arav, Amarav says, no, afilu tima be'eved kenani. You could even say we're talking about an eved kenani. Na'ase ke'omer lei. This is like a case where a person says to the owner of the animal, do me a favor, just give the animal a little zetz and it'll come towards me. I will say, now what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. So let's listen to the following case. Let's say I am purchasing I am purchasing an animal from Reuven. So remember, under normal circumstances, there are certain kinyanim that would be used for the acquisition of livestock. Let's say I go and I say to Reuven, Reuven, listen, do me a favor, just give the animal a little patch, give the animal a little zetz, and let it run towards me. And I agree to acquire it ultimately like that. So even though that is not a formal form of acquisition, I'm saying, nevertheless, if I say to Reuven, I am willing to accept responsibility for the animal, once you give the animal that little patch and it runs towards me, then that indeed is a binding transaction. So what Rav is suggesting is, even if we're talking about Eved Kenani, so because the Shoel is instructing the Mashiel, the owner of the animal, to dispatch it with the owner's Eved Kenani, so it's as if the borrower is saying, I agree to accept upon myself responsibility from the time that you dispatch the animal with your Eved. So even though technically speaking, it's not yet leaving the owner's Rishus, but because the borrower is willing to accept responsibility during transit, therefore that responsibility transfers towards him. So it says the Gemara, Meisil, raise the kasha, Hashol asapar avashuchol biad bino biad shluchol chayiv. Yet we learned that if I borrow a cow from Reuven and Reuven sent it in the hands of his son, right, or in the hands of his shaliach, chayiv. So I'll say, sa'ayim chayiv. So again, remember we're talking about over here, this is a case where the borrower instructed the owner to send the animals. Any time that the borrower instructs the owner to transfer, so the borrower accepts responsibility during transfer as well. However, biad avdo pater, but yet if the master dispatches the, dispatches the animal in the hands of the eved of the owner, and something happens in transit, so the show of the borrower will be pater. So we'll say, how do we understand this? Bishlam of the Shmuel, Masnis in Bevet, every Brice of Eved Kenani. So we'll say, according to Shmuel, there's a simple resolution. The Mishnah Rabosai, which says that the borrower is chayiv for something that happens in transit when the animal is in the hands of the owner's Eved, that's talking about a case of an Eved Ivri. Because the Eved Ivri, again, because he's not owned by the master, therefore we could view it as if the animal has left the master's Rishus. As opposed to the Braisa that says that it is the owner who bears full responsibility for what happens to the animal in transit. When it's transported by his Eved, it's talking about what? An Eved Kenani, a Gentile servant who is the property of the master, and therefore again the animal has not yet left the domain of the master himself. I said the Gemara says El Rav Kasha, but what will Rav do with this? Amar l'Rav lo tema naasek omerle ela ima ba omerle hikisha b'makel v'hisavo. To which Rav said, we're dealing with a case where essentially Rabosai, the borrower explicitly says to the owner of the animal, I am willing to accept upon myself responsibility for the animal from this moment. Meaning even though on a technical level, the Eved is your property, and therefore when the Eved transports the animal that has not yet left yours, the owner's property, I am hereby willing to accept upon myself responsibility even during transit. And when you accept upon yourself responsibility, even if you are not halachically obligated to do so, then obviously that responsibility does in fact transfer over to you. Ditmar. So the Gemara says the following. Ditmar, we learned, Hashileni parascha va'amrle biadmi. So I say to Reuven, lend me your cow. And Reuven says, so biadmi. Biadmi means, how should I transfer it to you? How should I get it to you? Va'amrle, hikisha b'makel v'tavo. And I say to Reuven, don't worry, just do me a favor, right? Just give the animal a little patch, and the animal will run towards me, and I will acquire it then. Amrav Nachem, Amrav Ravua, Amrav Kigon, Shiyatasam Yeshus Mashil, Umesa Chayiv. Suppose I remember again, Rav Nachman says the name of Rav, Ravua says the name of Rav. Now what are we talking about? As soon as the animal leaves, the Rishus of the owner. So at that point in time, the borrower acquires it. So if it were to go ahead and die in transit, and in this case, transit means literally running from the owner to the borrower, then ultimately the borrower would be chayiv for that loss. So the Gemara says, Neima misayayale. So we'll say, that the following supports this idea. Hashileni parascha. I say to Reuven, let me borrow your cow. Va'amrle biadmi. And Reuven says to me, how should I send it to you? And I say to Reuven, just give it a little zest and it'll come to me. So remember, we'll say, as once it leaves the reshus of the owner, if it dies in transit, meaning while it's walking towards me, I, the borrower, go ahead and retain full responsibility. So just understand what's happening. Well, let's finish the Gemara. Amar Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi, what's the case here? Kigon shahaisa chatzero shel shoel lifnim mechatzero shel mashiel. To which the Gemara says, but 1 second, we defined that case in a relatively narrow way. How did we define that case? They are talking about a situation where the chatzer of the borrower is inside of the chatzer of the owner. Now, what does that mean? So if you can imagine the following. There's Rishus HaRabim, right? Public domain. From public domain, let's say again, right off public domain, is the Rishus of the Mashiel. Is the Rishus ultimately the property of the owner of the animal. I, the borrower, happen to have a chatzer inside the chatzer of the Mashiel. Which means me, I can't access my chatzer through Rishus HaRabim. The way for me to access my chatzer is how? To walk through the Rishus of Ruvain, the owner of the animal. Look at Rashi for just a moment. The case over here is that the property of the Mashil, we'll call him the owner, is open to Rishus Rabin. The Chatzar HaShoel Lefnimi Menu. And the Chatzar of the Shoel is inside the Chatzar of the Mashil. Upsucha Lechatzero Shal Mashil. She Nichnasin the Yotzin Lechatzero Shal Shoel Ela Derech Chatzero Shal Mashil. The only way to enter into the rishus, to the property, to the chatzar of the borrower, is to walk through the chatzar of the owner. The hasam samcha daite de shoel to mishayamdu habaylim lefanah la tosel tzad chatzero shal shoel umachi lei bechutra vanday lahasim rihata vahud mishabed shoel lenafshe. Avalim ha'isat tzvich. I'm just going to read these lines and I'll translate it. Avalim ha'isat tzvich alavo derech rishus harabim. The olam emulachafilu amar lehachi lo sam chadaiti ishi afkirenu amashil below shomer below shibi nafshas shavu adar. So listen to this. So we were just discussing before the following situation. We were discussing the idea that you could have a situation where if I'm borrowing an animal from Reuven, I might say to Reuven, Reuven, do me a favor, just give the animal a little patch, let it run towards me, and I agree to accept upon myself responsibility for the animal while it's quote unquote in transit. To which the Gemara says, but we discussed this, and we define the parameters of that case. What kind of case is that talking about? That's somewhat the following situation. I'm borrowing an animal from Reuven. It also happens to be that I have a chatzer inside of Reuven's chatzer. My chatzer is inside of Reuven's chatzer. No access for me to Rishus HaRabim without going through Reuven's chatzer. But now I happen to be borrowing an animal from Reuven. What do I say to Reuven? Reuven, listen, there's no need for you to arrange a formal transport of the animal from your chatzer to my chatzer. Rather what? Just give it a little zetz. Right, and it'll run into my chatzer, and I agree to accept responsibility for the animal from the time that you go ahead and you give it that little zetz. Says the Gemara, that's the case where the borrower agrees to accept responsibility for an animal in transit, even though there's no one transporting the animal. And why do I agree to accept the responsibility for the animal while it's quote unquote in transit? In this case of the chatzer within the chatzer, why? Because there's really nothing that could happen. Well, I mean, what's going to happen over here? There's only pretty much one direction for the animal to go, and that's forward into my chutzner. But in a normal case, where the animal, let's say, has to travel somewhere, the borrower would not accept responsibility for the animal, unless, of course, the animal is being transported by a person, to which the Gemara says, what's the case? The case, as we just explained it, is where the chatzer of the shoel is within the chatzer of the mashiel. Because when the owner of the animal sends me the animal, it's certainly going to run into my chatzer. To which the Gemara says, memra. So if that's the case, I mean, what's the chiddush over here? To which the Gemara says, no, it's necessary because there's gezaisa. What's gezaisa? Rashi says over here, sheish bechatzer hamashal zavios v'uktzin sheichol lasor sham ulahashmit b'machbe. Because there are other parts of the chatzer where the animal could run away to, and the animal could hide. So I might have thought, ma'u detema lo sam chadaite dimakayma hasam v'lo asya. I might have thought that therefore, even when I tell Reuven in this kind of case, with chatzer b'so chatzer, give the animal the zetz, it'll run towards me, and I accept responsibility from the time you give it the zetz. I might have thought maybe that's not true even in this case, since the animal could escape, or the animal could go ahead and run and hide in one of the corners. Kamash will on the sam chadaite. We will say kamash on that. No, that when you have a chatzer b'sul chatzer, so the borrower agrees to acquire the animal as soon as the owner gives it its zets. Because even if it runs and it runs to one of the corners for just a little bit, ultimately it will make its way to my chatzer. So we'll say. So bottom line in this case is we have machlokas Rav and Shmuel. We have machlokas Rav and Shmuel, and it happens to be the way that the Rambam understands this case is in accordance with Shmuel. So the case, therefore, the Mishnah according to the Rambam is the following: that if I go ahead and I'm borrowing a cow from Reuven. And I say to Reuven, I'm giving him the instructions for transfer. Send the animal with your Eved. So as long as it is an Eved Ivri, whose body is not acquired ultimately again by the owner, then as soon as the Eved Ivri begins to transport the animal, I, the borrower, accept responsibility for the animal. But again, remember, that is because I initiated the transfer. But should the owner choose to transport the animal through an Eved Kenani, so the owner would retain responsibility for the animal during transport. Why? Because since the Eved Kenani is property, so therefore the cow has not yet left the property of the owner, and therefore he still has full responsibility until it arrives in my rishus. Says the Gemara. Well, so now we get to another very interesting sugya. Says the Gemara the following. Amar Rav Huna, Hashol Kadu Mechaviro. If I go and I borrow an axe from my friend, Bakabal, if I use the axe to chop something, Kano, I have acquired the axe. Lo Bakabal, if I did not use the axe to chop something, Lo Kano, good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. Lo Kano, if I did not yet go ahead and use the axe, use the axe to chop something, then I have not acquired it. So we'll say, this is actually a very interesting ruling. So the Mishnah, the Gemara seems to be saying over here that Lamaisa, if I borrow an axe from someone, even though I have it in my possession, I don't actively acquire it until the moment that I use it. To which the Gemara says, well, what does that mean? What does it mean I don't acquire it until I use it? Lamai. Ilei Mela Onsin, if you want to say that I'm not responsible for, remember I'll say, normal circumstances, is chayv for onsin. It's chayv even for extenuating circumstances. Maybe you're going to say that I'm only chayv for extenuating circumstances once I begin to use the object. But just because I have it in my possession, I'm not yet chayv for extenuating circumstances. That can't be. My shna para to mishash she'ila. How could that be? Because why should this be any different than para? Right? If I borrow a cow, we just got finished saying that it could be that I'm responsible for onsin even when Rabbo say, even during transport, right? Even before it reaches my rishos. So if by a cow, under certain circumstances, I'm going to be chayiv ultimately for onsin even during transport, so when the axe gets to my hand, even if I haven't used it, of course there should be chayiv for onsin. To which the Gemara says, Ella, this is very interesting, lechazara. Rather, Rabbo say, what it means is the following. At what point in time is the owner of the object permitted to renege on the she'ela? When could he go ahead and say, I changed my mind and I want my object back? So watch this, says the Gemara. Bakabo lomasi haderbe. If the borrower has already used the object, then the owner cannot renege on the borrowing agreement. However, lo haderbe mashiel, lo bakabo, if the borrower did not yet use the object, then matzil mashiel haderbe. Then Rabbi Osai, then the owner is permitted to go ahead and retract. Look at Rashi, el chazar, it's right across in Rashi. Sheva machshel lachzor. Well, the Talmud menu, that if the owner wants to go ahead and renege on the agreement, besoch yimei hazman she'siyo she'sh ilos. So this is actually quite interesting. So Gemara now is suggesting that although, again, I, the borrower, become chayiv for onsin, as soon as the object reaches my possession, so nevertheless, the Gemara seems to be saying that as long as I have not yet used it, so the owner of the object could cancel the she'ila at will. But once I use the object, the she'ila, the borrowing, cannot be cancelled. Upligud Rabbi Ami. And this argues on Rabbi Ami, because what does Rabbi Ami say? Dom Rabbi Ami, Hamashil Kardum Shel Hakdish Ma'al. Supposed to listen to this. Let's say I have in my possession an axe that belongs to Hakdish. And I go ahead and I lend it out to my friend. Right? I lend it out to someone. So I lend an axe of Hakdish to another. Ma'al. I, the lender, have committed Mi'ila. Lefi tovas hana'a shebo. In accordance with the benefit I get from this act of lending. I'm just going to read the rice and then we'll explain it. V'chaveira mutra levakeh bo lechatzila. But I will say, once I, the lender, have committed mi'ila, the borrower is permitted to use the axe even lechatchila. So watch this. So look at Rashi just a moment. Mal hamashiel l'shalim lehekdish. Right? If one goes ahead, and so most of the case over here is, I am in possession of the axe of hekdish. I lend it out to someone. The lender is going to be the one who is chayv in mila, not the user. Also, remember again, the borrower has no idea that is an axe of hekdish. He doesn't know. He thinks he's just borrowing an axe from me. I have the axe. I know that it's hekdish, and I inadvertently went ahead and lent it out. This is all the case of mistaken use of hekdish. So what's the halacha? So I, the lender, have to pay hekdish. Keren shenena b'hash alaso. So I have to pay the value of what I benefit. Now remember again, this is a case of borrowing. So because it's a case of borrowing, therefore what? There's no what? There's no money that's exchanged hands, right? There's no money. This is a case I have lent him an object. So what's the hana? So watch this. It's very interesting. Umahi anaso lefi tovas hana shebo omdimbo. Here's what we evaluate. Kama hu rotze lihios nechsa mishalo. Well, listen to this. When you lend someone something, so what does the lender get out of this? Goodwill. Goodwill. And goodwill, by the way, in halacha, has a value. So this is very interesting. So listen to this case. So I have in my possession an axe of Hegdish. I lend it to Reuven. Now I, the lender, have committed an act of mila because I've taken something from Hekdish and I've allowed it to be used in a mundane way. But again, so what do I pay? So I pay the amount of money, obviously in addition to the actual value of the object, but I pay the tovas hana, meaning now Reuven has goodwill towards me. What's the value of that goodwill? How much would a person be willing to pay in order for someone else to have goodwill towards them? Which I will say is an incredible, incredible yisod, if you think about it. This idea, how much would I pay for someone to have goodwill towards me? And the answer is, people would absolutely pay something. Because remember, that goodwill could have ramifications in many different ways, right? That goodwill could have business ramifications. That goodwill ultimately could have borrowing ramifications if I need something for that person. So that amount, that represents the me'ila amount. So says the Gemara, the chap over here also is that after that, the person who has, look at the next Rashi, the chavero mutu levakebo lechatchila, and his friend is permitted to use the axe lechatchila, afilu yodo la'acha shebal yodo shehu shahekdish. Now, this is true, even if the borrower found out afterwards, meaning once it got to his hand, that this is indeed an axe of hekdish, shemecheivan sheshagag bo amashav, and his chayiv dimei tovas anu alekdish, it's very important halacha. The way mi'ila often works is once mi'ila has been committed, the item under certain circumstances is deconsecrated. And therefore, because in this case over here, the lender has committed act of mi'ila, so he is chayiv to go ahead and repay back the Beis HaMikdash, but ultimately the item itself is deconsecrated. Therefore, the borrower is permitted to go ahead and continue to use the object. So watch this, says the Gemara, vi'ilo kano. Now again, if you say that a borrower does not acquire something, then amai mal. Then I will say, see, remember, this whole case is predicated on the idea that what? That when I lend the axe of hekdish to the borrower, once the borrower acquires it, the act of mi'ila has been committed. Then I will say, now remember, what did we just get finished saying? We just got finished saying before that Rav Huna said that a shoel, a borrower, does not really acquire an object until he actively uses it. Not at the point that the object comes into his possession. The Gemara now is raising a kasha. Obviously, we see from this case of Hegdish that a borrower acquires an object when? At the moment that it comes into his possession. Because if he has not yet acquired the object at the moment that it comes into his possession, then why has Mi'ila been committed? After all, and furthermore, and why is the borrower permitted to continue to use this object? Mihadre, let him return it. Let him not acquire it. And let him not go ahead and commit Mi'ila. Therefore, you see that Rami Bar Chama disagrees with Rav Huna. And Rami Bar Chama says, no, that a borrower goes ahead and essentially acquires an object when? As soon as it comes to his possession, even before he begins to use it. Furthermore, Upligid Rabbi Lozer. This argues in Rabbi Lazar. How does argue Rabbi Lazar? Don't Rabbi Lazar. Kedash teknu mashiach b'lekuchos, kak teknu mashiach b'shomrim. The same way that Chazal instituted mashiach by lekuchos in purchasers, so too they established mashiach, that mashiach acquires by a shomer. So that as soon as a shomer ultimately again does mashiach on an object, he ultimately acquires it even before what? Even before he's actively used it. Tanya Amelachar, so that supports this. Kishem sheteknu mashiach b'lekuchos, kak teknu mashiach b'shomrim. The same that we've established mashiach when it comes to lekuchos, so too we have established mashiach when it comes to shomrim. Ukishem shekarka niknis peim amadeis b'kesef b'shtar b'chazak. On the same way that we say that ultimately again land is acquired through money, through shtar with chazaka, kach schirus nikne b'kesef u'b'shtar b'chazaka. So to Rebbe will say a schirus, a rental, is also acquired through kesef and shtar and chazaka. Schirus ma'avidite, what case of schirus are you talking about? Meaning, how could schirus ever be acquired with kesef, shtar and chazaka without mashiach? To which the Gemara says, Amrav Chista, schirus karka. Ultimately, again, we're talking about specifically the schira of karka. So we'll say, bottom line, what we have over here is, interestingly enough, a major machlokes about at what point in time does a borrower actively acquire the object. Now, here's what we know. Everyone will agree with the following. A shoal actively acquires the object for own sin purposes, that he's responsible for own sin from the time that he takes possession of the object. That everyone is agreeing with. The shaila seems to be, at what point in time is the mashiel, at what point in time is the owner of the object permitted to renege? So according to Rav Huna, it's only after the borrower went ahead and, only once the borrower went ahead and used it, if the borrower has not yet used it, then the owner could renege. If the borrower has already used it, then the owner cannot renege. Rabbi Ami has a little bit of a different approach. Rabbi Ami seems to say that the same way that the borrower acquires the object for own sin, once he does mashiach, and once he takes it into his possession, at that point in time, the owner of the object cannot renege as well. And Rabbi say that is really how we paskin. We paskin like Rabbi Ami, that pretty much, which makes sense by the time. It makes sense, why? Because at the time that you assume full responsibility is also the time that the transaction becomes irreversible. So therefore, for a shomer, since he assumes full responsibility from the time that he takes the object into his possession, even though he has not yet used it, the owner cannot renege on the agreement. Amr Shmo, so we'll say Tzadik Tess on the base, four lines down. Haiman de Gazal Chavitza de Tamri Mechadera. Well, this is an interesting case. A person steals, called Ruvain steals from Shimon, a chavitza, a cake of pressed figs. As she says over here, chavitza de Tamri, tamarim hamidubakim yachad, kari chavitza. Right, ultimately, again, a cake of pressed figs. So what happens? In the cake of pressed figs, there were normally 50 figs to the cake. So watch this. There are 50 figs in the cake. And I'll say that was a norm. 50 figs in a cake. So watch this. Agav hadodi mizdabe minu. So we'll say, if you sell the cake as one unit, a cake of figs would normally fetch 49 units of currency. Right? We'll call it 49. However, chada chada mizdabin benun. But if you would sell it fig by fig, ultimately, again, each fig will call it a zuz. Each fig would fetch a zuz. So if you sell the cake, essentially, you're selling it wholesale. So if you sell the cake wholesale, so ultimately, again, you get 49 zuz for it. You sell it one fig at a time, you go ahead and you get 50. You get 50. And we'll say, and remember again, this is how you would make your money if you sold figs. You would make your money really in volume. You'd buy the cake, and ultimately, again, you'd sell the figs individually. That's how you make your profit. So watch this. So now I steal a cake of figs from Reuven. So what happens? So Moses says, now how do I go ahead and repay this? So here's, remember again, what's the shell in terms of repayment? So how do I evaluate repayment? Is repayment based on the value of the cake as a whole, in which case it's worth 49, or do I look at the value of the cake based on its value of if I would have sold each fig individually, which would have made it worth 50? So it says the hedgeot meshalim chamishim nechichada. So we'll say if I stole from a regular person, I have to pay back 49 zuz. Lehekdish meshalim chamishim vechumshayu. Right? Interestingly enough, But for Hekdish, if I stole the cake of prestigs that belongs to Hekdish, I'd have to pay back 50. I'd have to pay back 50 plus a penalty fifth. Right, plus a penalty fifth. Because whenever you go out and you misappropriate Hekdish property, ultimately, again, not only do you have to pay principal, but you also have to pay a penalty fifth. So says the Gemara, Masha'in kein b'mazik. But I will say, this would not be the same thing when it comes to mazik. In other words, the halacha is, if you were to damage Hekdish property, you would not be chayiv in the fifth. Lo mashalim chumsha. You would not be chayiv to pay the penalty fifth. How do we know that? Damar mar, ish ki yochal kodesh. Because we'll say, the pasuk by Hekdish says, v'ish ki yochal kodesh b'shkaga. If a person accidentally eats Hekdish, v'yosef chamishi so'alov, you go ahead and you have to add on the additional fifth. V'nasan l'koin es ha-kodesh. So we'll say, so therefore again, we see the penalty fifth does not apply to Hezek. So prat lemazik, this comes to exclude mazik. So both say. So we see over here is the following. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, actually not yet. So we see over here is the following. That in this case, I'm stealing a cake of pressed figs. When I sell the cake as a whole, it's worth 49. When I sell the figs individually, it's worth 50. How do I evaluate my obligation to repay? So if I'm stealing from Stam an individual, so I have to repay 49. But if I'm stealing from Hekdish, I have to repay back 50. Which what the Gemara seems to be telling me is that what? That the responsibility for stealing from Hekdish creates a heightened responsibility. I have to pay back more, and there's additional to the fifth, that I have to pay back to Hekdish as well. So maskif le Rabibi ba'abaye. So Rabibi said ba'abaye, lehejot. I don't understand. When it comes to Hedyot, Rabbi says, I steal this cake of pressed figs from Reuven. Why am I only obligated to pay back Reuven 49? After all, Neymale, let Reuven say to me, I was going to sell this cake of pressed figs, how? One fig at a time. So therefore, when you stole this from me, what you really did is you deprived me of 50 zuz. So you should have to pay me back 50. I lost out on the opportunity to sell the cake of pressed figs for 50 zuz. So we'll say, listen to this. Actually, an incredible halacha. Amar Rav Huna, Brei Rav Yoshua, Shamin Beis Sa'ah Ba'osa Sada. Tonight. So we'll say, remember again, we actually learned this before. That we'll say, remember again, we'll take a look at Rashi for just a moment, but very quickly outside. If I go into Reuven's field and I damage a row of produce, so remember again, when evaluating damages, we never evaluate damages just based on the value of the produce in a vacuum. Rather, what do? We look at the value of the field with this row of produce and without this row of produce. And the difference between those two values is the amount of damages that I have to pay. Now, also, understand, those could potentially be two dramatically different values. If I look at the value of the produce by itself, that's usually a higher number than if I look at the value of the field with this row or the value of the field without this row. The field may be 10 acres large. So therefore, again, the value of the field with this row and the value of the field without this row may be a relatively small amount. Masha Inkin, if I look at just the value of the produce, that could be a higher amount. The Gemara teaches us that when we evaluate damages, we evaluate damages based on the value of its impact on the entire field, not on the value of the produce by itself. That's what it means. Shamin beis sa'ah ba'os sa'ada. Look at Rashi. Shamin beis sa'ah ba'os me'os sa'ada. Tanan ka'bein nezikin d'shem. So we'll say this from our Baba Kama days. So when it comes from nezikin d'shem, we learned, ski yivar ish sa'ah okerem. Tanan keitzav mishalemes mashe zika. So how do you go ahead and evaluate that which was damaged? Shamin beis sa'ah ba'os sa'ada. Kama haisi yafa, v'kama yafa, v'imidaktik in liyo shaman ha'achil levado. So we'll say we evaluate. What's the value of the field with this row of produce, the value of the field without this row of produce? And we do not evaluate the row of produce by itself. V'imidaktik in liyo shaman ha'achil levado, ma'haisa shava rugazu shnecheles, elamash nechsa beisa'a midameha. Midameha. Imlo, imhais, imhaya balimkar karka imzriyasa. Ma chasru damav b'shvil achilas arigazu, dahainu kula gabei, dahabal liknos karka lo yenichen b'chas. So we'll say, so therefore, bottom line, what the Gemara says is the following. Bottom line, you see, that when it comes to evaluating theft, in a non-Hekdish scenario, we use a more lenient form of valuation when trying to evaluate the theft. So therefore, in the same way, And this is theft slash damages. Therefore, in the same way that if I go into Reuven's field and I consume or I damage a row of produce, we don't evaluate the value of that row by itself, but we evaluate the value of that row in the context of the larger field. So too over here, so too in evaluating the value of the theft of the cake of pressed figs. So what? I don't go ahead and evaluate it based on if he would have sold it off one by one, but rather I evaluate it based on if he would have sold the cake of figs as a whole. Therefore, the value of the cake is 49, and therefore that's what I'm responsible to pay. Lememra, the Savar Shmuel, the Din Hayot Lavka Din Gavo Adami. Are you telling me then that Shmuel holds that the halacha rabos of a regular person is not like the halacha of Hekdish? V'hatran, but we learn, listen to this case, not all Evan Okora me Hekdish. It was in the case over here. The case over here is, if you look at Rashi, not all Evan, but Meseches Chagiga Parchina Michte Mishkal Shekleha Mali Benam Umali Natan Lachaver Vilkina BeGizbar Shavnei Kodesh Mustarin Lo Askina. So let's listen to this. I am the Gizbar. I'm the executive director of the Beis Hamikdash, right? I'm the executive of the Beis Hamikdash. Therefore, again, it's normal for me to deal with the materials of the Beis Hamikdash. So I have in my property, I have in my possession, a stone or a beam of the Hekdish. Of Hekdish. So I take a stone or a beam of Hekdish, lo mal. So we'll say, this is actually very interesting. So if I go ahead, and I take a stone of the Beis Hamikdash, and let's say I put it in my house. Now again, this is talking about a case where I did not change the stone, nor did I cement the stone in. Let's say I just put the stone in one of the walls of my home in a way that it could be taken out and I haven't changed the form. Technically, I haven't committed Me'ilah. Why haven't I committed Me'ilah? Because there's been no Shina Rishas. As we're going to see, Me'ilah requires some type of change of domain. Because I am the Gizbar, and therefore I have the right to have in my possession, ultimately a stone of the Beis Hamikdash, I've not committed Me'ilah. However, Nastan Lechavero, but if I, the Gizbar, give the stone to my friend, then Ma'al. I'm sorry, Nastan Lechavero, who Ma'al Vachavero Loman Amal. So we'll say, in that case, I have committed Me'ilah, my friend has not committed Me'ilah. However, Bina Besoch Beso, if I go ahead and I build it into my home, Lo Ma'al Ad Shiyadur Tachteha B'Shaveprutah. Right? So what happens? If I go ahead and I build it into my home and I dwell under it, so I get benefit now from it being built in my home. So ultimately, once I get a pruta's worth of value from that stone in my home, then I am chayav, I've committed me'ilah. V'yosef Rabbi Avo Kamed Rabbi Yonasan. V'yosef V'kar Mishmei D'Shmuel. So what do we learn from this? Zos Ameres Hadar B'chatzar Chaver Shalomidaito Sarech Lalos Lo Schar. I will say, what do I learn ultimately again from this case? I learn that if I live in my friend's chatzar without his knowledge, even if he doesn't normally rent out this chatzar to other people, I am chayiv to go ahead and pay him rent. Look at Rashi. Zosemes, first white line of Rashi, will say, Techidar tachte amal. What did we just learn by Hekdish? That the moment I go ahead and I live, if I build that stone into my home, and I live, or that piece of wood, that beam, let's use a beam, you build that beam into my home, and I benefit, I live under that beam, so to speak, and I get benefits from it, I have committed me'ilah. V'afagav d'lo shanye, and even though, again, the beam has not changed at all, hadar b'chatzachayver shlomi das b'aylim, tzarech la'alas tzchas. So we'll say, what do we learn from here? The same way that if I live under the beam of Hekdish and get benefits from that beam, I have committed me'ilah, even though, again, nothing has really been done to the beam. Nothing's changed from the beam. Hekdish has not lost out. So too, if I live in the chatzar of my friend without his knowledge, so he doesn't know. And let's assume, by the way, he was not renting it out to anyone else. I have to go ahead and pay him as well. So I'll say, what do you see from here? You see from here that what? We do learn out the laws of Hedyot from the laws of Hekdish, to which the Gemara says, Amrei Rabbi Yochanan, Hadar Beis Shmuel Me'ahi. Shmuel recanted, or he retracted from this last statement. How do you know that he recanted from this last statement? Maybe he changed his mind by the case of the figs, to which the Gemara says, Dilma meha hadar, lo meahi hadar. No, it's not true. Rather, he retracted again this last statement. Kidurava, Dumarava, Hekdish Shalomi Das, Kehedyot Midas Dami. Because we'll see ultimately again, Rava said that's what? Hekdish Shalomi Das, the use of Hekdesh, Rav said, ultimately again, inadvertently, is like the use of head yot, ultimately again, midas. And therefore, ultimately again, says the Gemara, we cannot learn out the case of Hadar Mechatzah Chavero, Shalomi Daito. So I'll say, so bottom line, what the Gemara is suggesting over here, is that we cannot learn out the cases of head yot from the cases of Hekdesh, because the cases of Hekdesh have their own specific nuances. Therefore, you cannot extrapolate from head yot, from Hekdesh to head yot. Fine, let's just finish up. Amar Rava. Hani shikolai de chavero. Excuse me. Hani shikolai. We'll say shikolai are people who transport products, people who carry stuff. Schleppers. Schleppers. Gotta be a better term, but all right. I'm sorry. A porter. Good. Fine. A porter. So says the Gemara, right? So hani shikolai de tavru chavios de chamra lechen. The tavru chavios de chamra. So we'll say lechen v'na. So we'll say, so what happens? So porters are going ahead and transporting barrels of wine. So what happens? They break the barrels. So what's we'll say? So now, what do I have to repay? So watch this. Says the Gemara, biyomu d'shuka biznam nevehe. Now we'll say, now these barrels of wine on the market days would sell for, we'll call it, 5 zuz a barrel. 5 zuz a barrel. Bishar yome, on other days, mizdabna ba'arba. So we'll say, on non-market days, the same barrel would sell for 4 zuz. So the shayla now becomes, what do I have to repay? So ahajule biyomu d'shuka, say if the porters are giving back the barrel of wine, they're repaying the barrel of wine that they broke to the merchant on the market day, mahajule chavisa d'chamra. Then we'll say, all they need to do is what? Return a similar barrel of wine. As long as they are returning, ultimately again, a barrel of wine, that absolutely will be enough. Bishar yomi, but what happens if they're returning the barrel on a non-market day? Then mahadru lehei. Then we'll say, interestingly enough, they can't just go ahead and return a barrel. Rather, they have to pay back 5 zuz. And they back 5 zuz. So we'll say, so what's the reason for that? Because Lamaisa, they have deprived the merchant of an asset that is technically speaking worth 5 zuz. Velo amran, ela delo havile chamra lezabune. Further again, we'll say, this is only said when the merchant didn't have other wine to sell. So meaning, again, the merchant was banking on selling the wine that the porter was transporting. Now that the porter broke the barrel, that has caused a loss to the merchant, and therefore, again, the porter must go ahead and repay the merchant, ultimately, again, the 5 zuz if he's paying on a non-market day. Aval havile chamra lezabune, but I will say, if the merchant had other wine to sell, but for some reason did not do that, ha'i baile lezabune, he should have sold the wine that he had. The fact that he did not sell the wine that he had indicates that what? That he was not going to sell the wine, even had the porters not broken it, and therefore, again, they would not be chayiv for 5 zuz, they'd only be chayiv for 4 zuz. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, mahadru levhei, Damar lahu ihava gabai biyom deshuka havashala hey havashala fine velo amran the mahadru lehei. Rabbi says, so what we've established is that the porters essentially have to pay back the following. If they're returning the barrel of wine on a day on the market day, they could just return a barrel of wine. However, if again they're returning it on a non-market day, they would be obligated to go ahead and pay the owner, the merchant, 5 zuz. Why? Because the merchant could say, you deprived me of 5 zuz, because had I had that barrel of wine in my possession, I could have sold it for 5 zuz. Therefore, you owe me 5 zuz. The Gemara now is qualifying that statement. When is it that the porters are obligated to pay back the merchant 5 zuz? Now look at that Rashi. For the Amran, that's only true if the merchant had no other wine to sell that day. Then certainly again, had the porters returned the wine on the market day, the merchant could have sold that wine and made 5 zuz. However, again, if the porter had other wine in his possession, but he did not sell it, then what does that indicate to us? That for whatever the reason, the merchant would not have sold it on that day. Therefore, the porters did not cause him a 5 zuz loss, and therefore they would not be obligated to pay him 5 zuz. Furthermore, umenakile agatircha, but say furthermore again, they have the right to deduct from that 5 zuz the amount of the shopkeeper's labor. In other words, they will say, remember again, there's a certain amount of tircha that is involved in the shopkeeper having to go ahead and what? Having to take care of the transporting and the movement of the wine himself. So the porters, when they repay that 5 zuz, they could deduct from there the shopkeeper's labor. Furthermore, v'dami bar zenaisa. Well, so this is actually interesting. Rashi has two different versions over here. Rashi says, if you look at Demei Bar Zenaisa, Shenosim Lemachriz Be'ir Alayan B'Shukim Berachavos Yesh V'Beis Ploni Yailim Gersavos. Let's listen to this. Apparently, people used to pay advertising costs, marketing costs. So what happens? There'd be a guy whose job it was to announce where different products were being sold. So you would go ahead and you would pay the announcer to announce that in Silver's house they're selling wine. So I'll say, so apparently again, the porters will go ahead and we could deduct that amount of money as well. See, I will say, but it makes more sense to say the second version of Rashi. The second version of Rashi is what we call, interestingly enough, a tapping fee. What would happen? So remember again, wine would be transported in earthenware vessels. So what would happen? You would have to, they would have a guy whose job it was to tap the barrel, right? You'd have to put a, tap is the wrong word, but like a spigot in the, is that the right word? A spigot in the barrel, a tap in the barrel. So what happens? So the porters would take care of this themselves. So what the Gemara is just pointing out over here is, yes, it is true that the porters are going to have to pay back the owner of the barrel 5 zuz, because that's the amount of money they caused him to lose by not having an available barrel on the market day. But just understand, they could also deduct certain expenses from that 5 zuz as well. There's a tircha fee, that they save the shopkeeper, that they could deduct, as well as the tapping fee, which again, the porters will be able to tap the barrel themselves. That fee could also come off the 5 zuz. All right, the boss, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up with the Mishnah, Amir Tzeshem, tomorrow.